Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Scotty Baker of Gray Owl Sod Farm. Is that the correct name?
Gray Owl Farm, Amy, and I have my own business for the actual installation and delivery of the sod. But,
okay.
But for our purposes, Gray Owl Farm is right.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for being here. I always like to start the show by asking my guests to tell me a little bit about themselves, how you ended up in Alaska, and how you ended up in this agriculture enterprise.
Well, that's an interesting, you know, segue to the name of the farm. Because we were actually brought, you know, my folks brought me up here when I was nine, and we started out at Point McKenzie to start one of the dairy farms out there.
Yeah.
And really what happened was we stumbled upon an owl nest that was in the, you know, middle of these, you know, hundreds of acres of woods. And basically what had happened was they were clearing the land.
Okay.
They decided to save the owls.
Oh, okay.
So basically what happened, they spent the whole day re-rigging the equipment to chain down all these trees to save this one nest.
Okay.
So we got to watch an owl family grow up. This was at Point McKenzie.
Okay.
From there, we moved to the Palmer area in about 1986.
Okay.
And have been in Palmer ever since.
Yeah.
And my folks went and bought Gray Owl Farm in 93, and we've been there ever since.
Yep. And so I think I've had your mom on the show before. I think in the very beginning, I've been doing the show now for a couple of years. I think I had your mom on the show to talk about the flower basket and the greenhouse and that side of the equation. And then last year when Jenny took over and started Fresh Start Farms, I've had her on the show. But we want to talk today about the sod side of the farm. Sure. So did the Gray Owl Farm start as the greenhouse operation and slowly you grew into the sod business, or was it the other way around?
Well, they both started consecutively with each other.
Okay.
But I would say we prepared to start the sod farm before the greenhouses.
Okay.
The greenhouses were sort of a secondary thought simply because I suppose my mom didn't feel like she was, you know, contributing to the, you know, some of the manual labor that was involved in the sod production.
Yeah.
And frankly, you know, when you start a new, you know, endeavor like that, sod takes 3 years before it's ready for market. So, so once you get the idea that you want to do it, it's 3 years before you can make a penny at it.
I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. I wasn't keeping up with the math there. Gray Owl Farm has been producing sod since 90 what?
I would say we've been growing it since 94.
Okay.
And I believe our first sales were in 96.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm still not good at math. That's like 30 years, though, right?
It's getting
close. You've been around a while.
Well, I started, you know, when you know you're going to be talking about, you know, something that you've been doing for that long, then you start doing the math. And I've been putting lawns around the valley here for 25 years. It's darn near a career now.
almost
a career.
So on that note, did you always know that you were going to come back to the farm and help your parents out, be part of the business, or did you never leave? Like, talk a little bit about that.
Well, when my folks were just starting the business, especially the greenhouse business, they needed someone to run their greenhouse for them. So I actually managed their greenhouse while they were both finishing their teaching careers. And that was for about a period of 8 years while the greenhouse was just getting up and running. I'd watch that for them. And, you know, I was just a dumb kid. I didn't have a lot of other options. I'd sort of stalled out on school, didn't quite know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so I was spending my winter time just playing and traveling and doing what you know I wanted to do, and then I'd come back in the spring and summer and be on the farm.
Okay, very good. And now 25 years later, and you've put in how many lawns?
Oh geez, I don't know.
Another unfair, you know, math question.
Yeah, I'm not gonna sort of dive into how much that is, but we're sitting on 18 acres of sod that we can harvest. And I know in my time there, we've gone across the ground at least three different times, all areas of the ground.
Okay.
So, you know, 60 acres, divide that by a couple of people, and that's how many square feet we've thrown around. I trust you to do your own math
that way. That's a lot, though. That's a lot of back-breaking work, right?
Yeah. You know, it's how do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time.
You roll it up, and it really is one of those jobs that, especially from my point of view, you know, as an installer, where it doesn't matter how much it costs, people are always smiling when you're leaving.
Sure.
Because they've been staring at a piece of ground that has never looked like a lawn.
Absolutely.
Or they've been dealing with mud and tracking mud through their house for however long. Or they just bought a place and this is like the icing on the cake, you know, to go around their house. So it really is a rewarding job that
Absolutely.
Way. And something I'm currently passing on to my kids because they work with me in the summertime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so there's just a million questions running through my head about sod production and sod installation and all these things. I happen to have I have had sod installed at one of my homes before, and what a wonderful process that was. Exactly what you said, going from mud to a complete lawn in a couple of days was a beautiful thing. And then that park-like setting that you end up with where, mm-hmm. you know, all the neighbors are jealous and you want to dig up every little weed because it looks so nice all
right.
along the way, right? You said it takes 3 years from start to finish. Why does it take so long to get that sod ready for installation at a new home?
Well, number one, we don't irrigate where we're at. We're leaving it up to the natural environment to provide what it needs, you know, especially on our spot up there. And it's one of the original colony plots.
Yeah.
And my history research says that particular farm traded hands about six different times.
Oh, wow.
In the opening years of the colony project.
Okay.
Simply because it's got really deep topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
Just about anywhere on that farm, you can dig 5, 6, even 8 feet
wow.
before you even touch a rock.
Wow.
So if you imagine that type of climate that when it freezes solid. And it freezes like a concrete pad.
Sure.
So it's late to thaw out in the spring.
Yep.
And it's one of the, you know, furthest north colony plots too.
Yep.
So it's one of the first to freeze up too. So that automatically shortens the growing season up there a little bit. We also get a fair amount of wind. You know, all the old timers called that spot Breezy Point.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, after it does freeze, you've got all this snow cover in all the ditches and on all the edges, and that just blankets the springtime from coming sooner
sure.
then as well.
Yeah.
So on top of a really short growing season, we don't irrigate. It's grass.
Yeah.
You know, you start from seed the first year, you know, it's halfway there.
Yeah.
The second year, you could probably get away with harvesting it,
mm-hmm.
but you're cutting the sod about a half an inch thick, and you need a really developed root mass to be able to hold it together into a roll. That's what you get that third year.
Oh, okay.
And through that process, you can also take care of any of the weed control and really just make as perfect a product as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
And that takes that 3 years before it's that thick.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So a quick interruption to remind folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in studio this morning is Scotty Baker of Gray Owl Farm. So what is the name of the sod installation business if people are looking to connect with you in that way?
I use the name Grassroots Services.
Oh, okay.
And I've had that business, like I mentioned before, for close to 25 years now. It always seemed like a clever name, simply because, you know, at the way we use the term, at the grassroots level, you're trying to enact change. Well, I was trying to enact a business of my own, and it seemed like the name fit really well.
Yeah,
it keeps me busy in the summer.
Sure,
and it keeps. It really was one of our only, my wife and I's only form of income for many years when our children were very small.
Yeah,
I was going back to school to become a school teacher.
Yeah,
and all of that takes time and money, and there was more money going out than coming in. But I really appreciate what the sod was allowed me to do.
Sure.
Was to be my own boss and to be able to supply a service that not a lot of other people around this area were providing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not a lot of, there's two companies, right?
There's us and one other.
Yeah.
And, as far as installation, you can hire other landscapers to do the dirt work and to be able to put a lawn in for you. But, there's a certain benefit that comes with the experience too.
Absolutely. It occurred to me as I said that there's two companies here in the Valley that are growing sod, installing sod, et cetera. But can you go like to Lowe's and Home Depot and get sod from outside? Did they try that? Not that we would encourage that.
They've never brought sod up from outside simply because it does have a shelf life.
Okay.
Once you've cut sod and sort of removed it from its from its surface, you've got about a week before.
Oh, okay.
And that's tops before it absolutely needs to be unrolled and put back down.
Yeah,
what you're doing, with the harvesting of the sod is basically killing it and then reviving it again.
Yeah,
you've cut all of the roots away from it, so it's much like uprooting a potted plant. If you don't get it back into some, fresh soil and get some water on it.
Yeah.
It's not going to make it.
Yeah. How did you learn about this technique, Scotty? Is this something that your dad brought with him from the Lower 48, or is this something that you guys are self-taught over the last 25 years?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. Him and his brother in Iowa were selling sod for, 7 cents a square foot.
Oh, my goodness.
Back in the 70s when I was, just born.
Yeah.
And, they thought they were, as my dad likes to put it, cutting a fat hog back then, because all they were doing was tearing up pasture grass and replanting it. And they thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, so he had an old sod cutter, him and his brother. And, they supplemented their dairy income in Iowa by doing that. And I think my dad always had the idea that it would work really well up here, given, the rate of housing growth.
Absolutely.
During the time period, during the early 90s and into the 2000s. And it did. But it's, it's like any form of agriculture. There's good years and then there's very lean years.
Right.
Absolutely. You have to be that next year kind of attitude.
Eternal optimist.
Yeah,
right?
If it doesn't work really well, but it is definitely economy based.
Sure.
You can definitely tell how well your business does based on the economy, because nobody really absolutely needs a brand new sod lawn.
Yeah.
It's a luxury.
Sure.
Compared to dropping some seed down and waiting.
And wishing and hoping and crossing your fingers, right?
Right.
So let's talk about the type of grass that's being grown.
Sure.
What's unique about it? What type of seed are you using? Tell us a little about that part of it.
Well, we have only grown and ever sold one kind of sod, and that's Nugget Bluegrass.
Okay.
It's a Kentucky bluegrass variety that is has evolved and is now native just to Alaska.
Oh, really?
They can grow it other places, but it evolved in areas like Nome and in Hope is where they found the original strains of grass growing.
Really?
So it must have been a Kentucky bluegrass variety that came off boats or ships and basically was over the period of several hundred years, has sort of evolved into this really tough, really great-looking bluegrass variety that It's incredibly drought tolerant.
Okay.
It doesn't mind the shade so much. So if you've got a lot of trees, it's one of the grass varieties that does the best in cool and shady as well. It's actually really good for in the heat if they can grow it in Delta, one of the hotter places in the state. And so it's got a wide range of tolerances.
Yeah.
And it's pretty.
Yeah.
And when it's, you know, if you let it go to seed, it's got that beautiful purpley blue kind of glow to it that when the wind catches it, there really isn't anything much prettier.
Yeah, interesting. So where, if it's unique to Alaska, where are you guys getting your seed? Are you saving your own seed and harvesting that, or are you getting it from somebody else, Plant Materials Center, et cetera?
Yeah, no, that's correct. We actually do keep a certain acreage every year for seed stock, and we harvest our own seed.
Okay.
And we also sell seed, too.
Okay.
So any... you know, any homeowner who wanted to buy their own seed and start from scratch, just like we do, in the springtime or the fall, can plant their own yard with this same type of seed.
Okay,
and we've had really good luck with it. For that reason, it's the only variety we've ever grown.
Okay, so before we forget, let's tell people about your contact information, Scotty. If someone was interested in either talking about sod for the spring or seed or installation or whatever those services that you are available to provide, where can they find more information about you, or do you want to give your contact information right over the air?
Sure, we can do that. You can look us up. I know it seems antiquated to grab the phone book and start looking at phone numbers, but
do those still exist?
We do have an internet presence as well. I'm not necessarily in charge of that, but you can find Grail Farm and directions to our place on the web. And but 745-0353 is our business number, and we're always at the other end of that telephone number in the summer. That's really the best way to find us, or if you've got questions or want to place an order for pickup, if you want me to come and give you a free estimate.
Okay.
That's always the best number to use, and we like to stay busy, and we really do like to cater to homeowners.
Sure.
And those who, you know, maybe you only want 1,000 feet or 2,000 feet.
Yeah.
That's not to say we don't do big jobs.
Yeah.
But we really like to please a lot of different people rather than, say, get a large government contract and there went our 6-acre supply for the summer, and now we have to start saying no to everybody else around here.
Right.
The reason we started it was for the purpose of trying to cater to smaller jobs.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that was going to be my next question. You mentioned you had 18 acres in production. You have to reserve some back for seed production. It takes 3 years. So is it about 6 acres every year that you have available?
That's about what we've got. And depending on the year, you know, say we only sold 4 or 5 one year, we might have extra to sell the following year just to sort of get back to even. But we can supply anywhere up to, you know, 6, even 7 acres per season.
Okay, very good. Well, another quick reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and in the studio with me this morning is Scotty Baker of Gray Owl Farm and Grassroots Services.
Services, correct.
Perfect, okay.
Right.
So in kind of this last segment, Scotty, there's still like a million questions going through my mind. First off, a lot of homeowners these days, a lot of people these days are real interested in organic production. They want to, you know, minimize the use of herbicides, pesticides, et cetera. What's your stance on that, or how does your product, you know, fit into that world?
Right. Well, you know, sod's unique in that, okay, you're not eating it, right?
Right.
A plant, especially grass, is going to use either an organic-based chemical or a manufactured chemical in exactly the same way. Sometimes more efficiently if it's in a chemical form.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I really don't think it's feasible to have a monoculture. Well, you're growing one thing and one thing only and trying to keep all of the weeds out of it without using some type of chemical fertilizer, you know, as well as some type of weed control. But we don't ever overdo it.
Sure.
We only use what we need to, and in order for that to be sustainable, take a look at the soils up here. They're very good for growing, but incredibly sterile.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yep.
And in order to grow a lush lawn,
yeah,
you're going to have to feed it.
Yep.
And in order to grow a lush sod field, you've got to feed that as well. So I really do appreciate all of the different viewpoints.
Sure.
But for some components of agriculture, there's really only one way that you can have a really nice looking product, especially monoculture.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the way that you explain that, because I think, you hope that nobody thinks of chemicals as like the bad guy or like, and we hope that people realize that no farmer would ever overuse chemicals on purpose, because that's not going to benefit them in any way, shape or form. Right. They have to do it in the most sustainable, economic way for it all to make sense. And that's one of the things that I hear a lot from Alaskan farmers in particular, is the need for chemical fertilizer, because the soils just don't have what most plants and most systems need up here to be the most successful that they can be. So
right.
I appreciate the way that you explain that. It makes good sense that to make the plant as successful as possible, you got to give it what it needs. And there's not always an organic answer for that, right?
Right.
Yeah. What's your number one pest on the sod farm?
Oh, I would say, I would say moose, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's not that they overgraze it.
Right.
But if they get into the fields at the wrong time of the year, they'll leave big footprints.
Lots of damage,
And, you can cut a roll of sod and then unroll it and see a perfect moose print in a roll. And obviously then you've got a hole that you need to patch that wouldn't have normally been there. In certain times in the spring, they can sink down about 4 or 5 inches, and that hole is going to be in the ground.
Absolutely,
probably for the next 10 years. You'll continually find that same hole, even on, following crops, depending on how deep you might till up the next time around.
Yeah. And you guys are out there, the location of your farm, north of Palmer, where it is, and there's wooded areas around you. I mean, moose are probably...
Well, like I said, it's a 40-acre square, and 20 acres is still, virgin forest behind us. So we're getting a lot of moose traffic coming off of Soapstone and Buffalo Mine Road back into our place. And we see all sorts of moose there. As far as other pests, Alaska's kind of unique that way. There's not a lot of little bugs and things.
Right.
So we don't use any type of insecticide.
And
there's just no real need for it.
Absolutely.
Because grass is kind of one of those really hardy plants that, if you feed and water it, it can take care of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear moose as the number one pest from way more farmers than I would ever expect. Do you have moose fence? You don't have moose fence around the property then?
No, we don't necessarily have to keep them out. We just kind of curse them after they're gone. There's a cohabitation that has to happen that way.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about installation. We've talked a little bit about pests and what the plant needs. For a person that's never seen it before, talk to us about how you do the harvesting and what that machine looks like. You talked about how you're kind of killing the grass, you're cutting it off at the root base, but what does that process actually look like? What is that piece of equipment actually doing?
Well, it takes somebody to operate. And again, we use a small one-man sod cutter, so you can use it by yourself. But obviously, as with any agriculture, more hands makes lighter work.
Sure.
So having someone follow this sod cutter and make sure each roll rolls up nicely when the machine's working right and the conditions are right, it'll actually cut and roll up each roll as it works. And you're riding on it, so you're not walking behind it. You're basically along for the ride steering this machine. And it'll cut an 18-inch wide by 6-foot long strip and roll it up behind you, about a half an inch thick.
All right. And is that all grass and roots, or is it bringing up some of the dirt in the root system?
It's grass and roots, but there's a little bit of soil that comes with it. Okay. I would say about half of that would be actual soil mass along with the roots. The thinner you can cut it, the quicker it'll also root down once you've transplanted it.
Okay.
And the lighter it is.
Yeah.
So you can turn a roll from 15 to 25 pounds really easily with just a small adjustment in the thickness of the sod.
Yeah.
So you're constantly adjusting simply to make it easy and to make it root down quicker once you've transplanted it.
Yeah.
But, you know, for your average homeowner who might want to come and pick some up, they can fit 500 or 600 square feet in the back of a half-ton pickup bed. So it takes up more volume than it is heavy.
Okay. And if a person is thinking that maybe they want to have sod installed on their property, mm-hmm. What's the number one prep work, or what's the number one thing they need to do at their site to get it ready for sod?
Right. Well, removing any large rocks is key, unless you're going to be burying them by, say, the degree of a foot thick.
Oh, okay.
If you're just going to be top dressing with soil, you want to get all the big rocks, you know, picked up because they can tend to migrate up through the dirt.
Right.
You find them lying on top of your lawn a few years later once the frost has moved them up and down. We recommend anywhere from 4 to 6 inches of good topsoil.
Okay.
Before you add the sod. You want to prep it just like you would a seeded lawn.
Okay.
And the more topsoil you have, the less you have to water it, the less you have to tend it. I've gone through and gone behind irrigation systems. I don't think you need irrigation.
Okay.
In this area, if you've got the soil depth.
Okay.
Because once you've transplanted the sod, you may only need to water it 4 or 5 times really, you know, thoroughly. And then you can forget about it, like you would a normal lawn.
Huh.
So what you might be spending in cost for the sod, you can make up by you're making up in actually not using as much water as
right.
if you were having to water it from seed.
Okay, very
so
good.
So if water's an issue,
yeah.
That can be beneficial too.
Okay, and wrapping up, Scotty, what's the future of the farm? Are you going to be a sod farmer for this whole next chapter of your life? Hope that the kids take it over?
I enjoy the spot because I live up there too.
Yeah.
And
makes for a nice lawn for you, right?
Yeah, every third year it does.
Yeah,
sometimes I'm staring at a blank space. But it is really something that I do want to continue. My kids are working with me, and I think it's really important to instill that type of work ethic in the next generation. That
Absolutely.
Seems to have gotten lost along the way somewhere.
Agreed. We need more kids raised on farms, right?
Right.
Well, Scotty, I've enjoyed learning more about Gray Owl Farm and Grassroots Services this morning. Thanks so much for being my guest on Ag Matters Radio.
Well, thank you, Amy. I appreciate it.
All right.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.